If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
People can change anything they want to. And that means everything in the world. Show me any country, and there'll be people in it. It's time to take the humanity back into the center of the ring and follow that for a time. You know, think on that. Without people, you're nothing. Without people, you're nothing.
Stoke the fire.
So welcome to an all new episode of Stoke the Fire, ladies and gentlemen. It has been a while. We're circling back. We are stoking the fires once again. Matt Stocks here with Jesse Leach. Joined today, dude, how exciting is this, by the legend, Danny Filth. But as we just very briefly spoke about off mic, the main thing that has got us excited about today is getting to know the man behind the myth, Danny Filth.
Indeed. Yeah, it's exciting stuff. Obviously, a lot of people know who he is. A lot of people know the band. And for me, I'm excited for the whole package, for sure.
Hell yeah. Well, on that note, I'm going to click admit, and we'll hit the ground running and see how there. Even his screen holder is amazing.
I love it.
But yeah, I saw Danny at a tattoo convention, that event that I was hosting about a month ago. He was there with his partner, who's an artist. So we got to catching up, and I was like, dude, we got to get you on Stoke the Fire. So that's kind of how this came around. And cometh the hour, cometh the man. There he is. How are you, Danny? Oh, you need to unmute yourself. We've got visual. Just need audio.
No. Can't hear you. I don't think he realizes. Yeah.
Can you hear us, mate? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
There he is. Smooth sailing.
What's up? No, look.
It looks amazing, mate. Yeah, nicely lit. You've got some bugs on the wall behind you.
That'll be from the Russian government.
Good to see you, mate. I was just saying to Jesse that me and you ran into each other about a month ago now at the UK TTA. It was lovely catching up with you then. Have you and Jesse spent any time together on the road at festivals? Have you two met properly before?
I'm not sure. I think I met you once. I think you came to visit the guys when they were on tour.
Yeah. If any interactions between you and I were ever to happen, it was extremely brief. The only one time I remember literally brushing by you, we were in the Philippines playing at like 2 a.m.
And I was looking for my iPod, I think.
Yeah. And I was beyond exhausted, and like between alcohol and caffeine, just cross-eyed trying to get ready for stage. So brief interactions.
Do you drink on the road, Danny? I know you enjoy beer when you're at home. Are you somebody who, you know, drinks before shows?
I don't drink anymore.
Oh, you've given up completely, have you?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
How long have you been clean?
Clean. Kind of annoys me when people say this. I'm actually 6 months tomorrow, but I never put it anywhere because it sounds like before that you put 6 months sober, but he's assuming that before that you're a raging alcoholic, and just literally was not the case.
You're ready for a change.
Yeah, I usually do it every New Year's. This year I did it before New Year's Eve, just to see if how different it would be. And if you can get over that, you can get over everything. He says that with a birthday coming up. It was relatively easy, actually. Just kept going. If people just keep reminding you every time you go out, oh, God, you're a non-drinker, or you can drive me, brother. It's a piece of piss.
Mm. I think that is the truth of it, is it's often other people's awareness and focus on it that is the only thing really that is kind of hard to deal with.
Yeah, it's a social thing. You can get over the social thing, you know, your confidence and everything comes back, and you don't view it as the same sort of thing. You don't think, oh God, I've got to have a drink. Now I think, oh my God, I've got to have a pineapple juice or something.
Yeah.
Those things would kill me.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how that works. I completely agree. So I've scaled way back. You know, I'll have periods of time where I'll have a drink and then go for like a month without it. And I find during that month, clarity, I sleep better. It's just a nice way to be. So as much as I still dip my toe in, I could see how just not stopping would not be a huge issue. But the social thing for sure. And I love going out to eat. I love going to places and being sociable. And usually that is accompanied by a drink. So it's a matter of replacing that. You know, I'll do mocktails. And you kind of trick yourself. It sounds silly, but it works.
Yeah, I have some mocktails, so bloody hell. You're paying more money than take the alcohol out and then charge you more money for them.
Yeah.
Danny, let's talk about punk rock, if that's all right with you.
You know, I never got to, I went to Vegas and I never got to the punk rock museum. I didn't have the time.
You were out there for Sick New World, right? That festival that just happened.
Yeah, we had the day off the next day. And we intended to, we just got waylaid by people.
Well, how was that festival, first of all? Because it was an amazing bill. I imagine lots of old friends out there. Did you have a good time?
Yeah, it was incredible. Yeah, really enjoyed it. Totally different from what I expected it to be.
What was it like? Was it like Disneyland for adults?
Yeah, a bit, yeah. Really relaxed. We got there on the Friday, and so we were there whilst we got a sound check and a few other bands like Sisters did, System of a Down, Korn, Deftones. Got to watch most of them, apart from System of a Down, a bit stuffy. They're like, we'd watch Korn just sitting on the grass. Then System of a Down came on, and we were doing our shit, so my girlfriend went to watch them. And the security guard came up and said, you're not supposed to be here. She goes, okay, I'm just, all right, where can I stand? And he sort of said, off-site. And she was like miles away. They were like specks in the distance. It was very odd behavior. But the whole thing was amazing. Really relaxed as well. I thought it was going to be complete chaos, you know, but no, real good vibe.
I think that format of show is going to be the future, isn't it? There was the emo one. There was that one that they've just done, this Dark New World one. Or did you see that? It's like an 80s.
No, theme. I didn't.
It's got like Devo, Psychedelic Furs, like all of these classic 80s stuff. And I feel like that, nostalgia is big business, right? I'm sure you can both attest to this. Nostalgia is now kind of the most valuable commodity in live entertainment. And so it's let's clump it all together and get everybody who likes that one scene there. And then you've just got this monster of an event.
Well, you are aiming toward people with disposable incomes, aren't you? And as a man, just touching 50, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, Jesse, you're about to turn 45 as well, aren't you?
Right. Yeah, and I would have to say, I think, you know, that's what music really does, though. It brings you to a memory. I mean, that's why people start to love a band or become obsessed with something, because there's memories attached to it. It's not just the music. It's when you heard that song. You know, people always tell me this. I'm sure you get this too. The first time they heard you, they were this age and this was happening, and they'll never forget the music video and this and that. So nostalgia runs through regardless. I think music and nostalgia go hand in hand. They're not, separated for sure. But yeah, as I get older, the more I look back on, you know, the stuff I grew up with absolute adoration, because it was just a moment in time, you know, and pre-internet stuff. You know, talk about like the late 80s, early 90s. Like, I cherish that music so much because it was just different. It really was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who were those bands for you, Danny?
In what context?
Sort of 12, 13, 14, just discovering it all, falling down the rabbit hole for the first time.
Oh my God, it was everything. It was like, I started off with Ultravox, believe it or not. And then after a bit of experimenting with pop and got straight into metal, but right at the deep end. So it went straight from Maiden and Merciful Fate to like Slayer and all the underground thrash stuff from that we used to discover in Shades in London. So like the Brazilian stuff and the European early destruction and what have you. But at the same time, getting really into punk and hardcore. So yeah, it was everything. And real strong recollections about, yeah, music, it was like you can attribute it to different emotions, different times, different feelings, what you were doing then, you know, family situations, some holidays. You know, I've got some holiday albums for sure. How Will I Laugh Tomorrow by Suicidal Tendencies. That's definitely a summer holiday album.
Yes.
Assumedly on the Walkman and the headphones, not in your parents' car.
No, of course. Although I did subject them to a few nights of John Peel. They're like, oh my God, Napalm Death are on there tonight. We've got to listen to this.
Yes.
So good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of people obviously associate you with metal and extreme metal, but I love the fact that you've always been very open about your love of punk. And, you know, whenever I see Bad Religion do a post on Instagram, there's usually a Danny Filth comment in the comment section, you know, showing them love. And I know they're one of your favorite bands. And I think for me, a lot of what you've done, maybe you could, you know, agree or disagree or shed some light on this. A lot of what you've done throughout the Cradle story seems to have been driven from a similar place to punk and this want to be in control and kind of do it yourself and perhaps shock and provoke. Like, I think a lot of the philosophies that punk rock showed the world, you've incorporated into, you know, extreme metal through Cradle of Filth. Would that be safe to say?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, I think as a musician, growing up with really strong musical identities and genres that you kind of cherry pick. We certainly did. Is it cherry pick or is it steal? I'm not quite sure, but, you know, one or the other. We borrowed some stuff from soundtracks and dark wave metal, obviously, but, you know, bits of everything. So, yeah, there was definitely a strong punk influence, especially in a lot of the early albums. Some really good punk riffs, you know, in the vein of Discharge, that sort of thing. Punk hard.
Yeah, I think that, but I also think there's a certain, I was saying this earlier as Matt and I were talking before you came on, there's a certain you don't give a fuck attitude that I definitely always liked about your band and who you were. And you pissed people off, you sort of caused controversy, but to me it was all part of it. I loved it. I thought it was great because that's what you kind of have to do with a band, you know? I think that definitely comes from punk rock. You know, we're talking about like the John Lydons, like the people who just were taking the piss and just didn't care. And I love that about what you have done with your, you know, especially in the early days, you know, it's great. It's great. I think more bands should do that kind of stuff.
Well, that's the thing. It's heavy metal. It's supposed to be dangerous, isn't it? That's what I always grew up loving all those bands that like were larger than life. I dare say that most people go, oh my God, but Wasp were a massive influence. They were pissing the PMRC off everything they did. And it was all with like a slight tongue, literally tongue in arse cheek. I was literally thinking of, no, I'm not really thinking of it. You know what I mean? Blackie Lawless and Chris Holmes and bloody arseless chaps. Thankfully, we didn't take too much influence from them, mate.
Even with the t-shirt, you know, and like, I'd love to get Jesse's thoughts on this because he grew up with a very religious, you know, father. And he's talked on the show a lot about not even being able to have like Maiden CDs in the house. So could you imagine, Jesse, if you'd come home one day with a t-shirt with a nun masturbating herself with a cross on the front and then Jesus is a cunt written on the back? What would the response have been in that house to that gift?
I would probably be dead. I think my father would have just crucified me at that time.
No pun intended.
But I think, you know, yeah. See, here's the fine line, though. I think, you know, there are people who are hyper religious that take offense and get super offended. And then there are people like me who kind of chuckle and like, I appreciate shaking up the foundations of religion. You know, having grown up in a strict household, you either A, become just like them, or you go the opposite direction. I think I've initially went the opposite direction, and now I kind of just sit in the middle where I'm, you know, there's no controversy to me anymore. I'm a pretty laid back guy, but I like things that shake up systematic stuff. I like when people push back against control. And I think that's the main issue I always had with it, was control. I was always under the thumb of it. But had I, you know, brought anything into the house like that, No, I wouldn't have heard the end of it. Are you kidding me? I mean, people know my Iron Maiden story, the Hellfire and Brimstone sermon I got from bringing Number of the Beast, the cassette tape, into the house. I can't even imagine. Had I to wear that, I probably would have been stoned to death or something. I have no idea.
But the thing about that shirt was it was actually more an anarchic statement than anything when we did it. It was just like, who could you poke with a stick more than anybody else and it have an overarching effect? I mean, you can alienate it and go for individual people like Hitler and that, but would it unify people or ununify people in quite the same way? And with the nun on the front, it really sort of isolated the intent of it, and it was a bit of a, as nasty as it is, and I must admit, I would be uncomfortable wearing it now. My girlfriend, we went for a meal and she inadvertently put it on as we walked in because it was chilly outside. And she had a cut down version of it, but there was enough of it. You know, there was definitely enough of it. And I looked at her with horror. I was like, oh my God, what are you doing? But I mean, I don't want loads of spit in my food, you know?
Mm.
And it's just... It's an awkward scenario, isn't it? But I'm pleased we did. It was good fun.
Mate, I rewatched earlier for the first time in years the Living with the Enemy. Dude, so good, so 90s, so British, just such a nostalgic kind of hilarious window into our society at that time. And the exact words you use in that program to describe the t-shirt is the pinnacle of distaste, which I thought it is so apt. That's kind of exactly what it is. And because they were saying, would you do another t-shirt? Would you kind of do a varying theme? And you're like, well, we can't top what we've done. That's it right there. That is the pinnacle of distaste. And it's very true.
Yeah.
Well, it brings me back to a band like Crass, for example. You know, you see all the quote unquote propaganda they used to put up, all the posters, the imagery of some of those 80s crust bands, like, showing, you know, people being shot in the head, and it's an anti-war thing. Like, to me, that stuff sticks, and in that shirt sticks. I think it's a brilliant way to get your band noticed and to piss people off and to be rock and roll. Really, at the end of the day, it's fucking rock and roll.
I'm sure some artists like Banksy or Shepherd Fairey would have some, you know, kind of interesting takes on it as well, because it's very much what guys like that are doing now. You know, they're probably doing a more watered down version of it, but it's in that same vein, isn't it?
Yeah, on walls in lower stuff. Yeah, putting it where it needs to be.
Do you know what you've always been really smart at, Danny? I don't know how conscious this is or how conscious you'd want to admit that it is, but what you've always been genius at doing is thrusting quite an underground art project into the eyes and consciousness of the mainstream, whether that's with stuff like that t-shirt or the Living with the Enemy show, even right up to the here and the now with your collaboration with Ed Sheeran, which I'm sure we'll get around to talking about, and Bring Me the Horizon fairly recently as well. Seems like you've always had an eye on how to retain the artistic integrity of Cradle, be an underground and an extreme heavy dark, you know, metal band, but then also have people in the press and just society at large who wouldn't know of, you know, other bands in your genres be aware of you.
Well, that was a bit of a double-edged sword, because everybody just immediately branded us as sellouts, you know, when we were cross-contamination genres or going on TV, you know, like, what's it called? Never Mind the Buzzcocks or Celebrity Get Me Out of Here. Well, I was supposed to go on there. That's a funny story about that. It wasn't that funny, so I probably won't repeat it. Funny to me.
Go on.
It would show the comments on it, which is even weirder, you know, because I've never watched it before in my life. Never will. But yeah, people were obviously, until Richmond came along. When Richmond came along, it was kind of cool. But before that, we got a lot of shit for that. I guess it's just, it worked. And I can only thank all the people around us who jimmied me into those slots, as they still do.
Yeah, I think I'd have to say for me, the people who sort of call people sellouts and false metal, and you know, Killswitch has gotten a bunch of that stuff too. It's like, at the end of the day, those people only serve to continue to push you into a conversation. So even the people that are disliking what you're doing, they're still talking about you. That's the way I look at it. You just have to sort of go, I like what I do. It's fun. I'm having a good time. I wouldn't necessarily turn on a band like Killswitch and listen to myself, but I like what I do. So like, who cares if you like it or not? You know, I'll be that person that you think is a sellout or false.
Yeah, never gonna please everybody.
No.
You know what I mean? No matter how hard you try.
Yeah. And I'm done trying. I don't care. I just don't care anymore.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you on that one. Actually, mine started a long time ago. You know, I hear you totally. People just have this a world view of you, and it's getting worse really now because obviously, before the advent of social media and stuff like that. When it was hard to actually get information on bands if they didn't want to, you know, show it. Not only did it add to the mystery and the kind of wonder and the excitement of everything, but also you can look behind the curtain and pull bands apart, you know, and find out where they live and where they shop and, you know, stuff like that. And when you do, you kind of open yourself up to all kinds of interesting interaction. Have you had a stalker yet, like a bad stalker?
I have, yeah. I've had a few of them. And it's interesting to me because, like, at the end of the day, you just wonder why. Like, what is the motive there? And what do they expect to get from encountering you in such an odd personal way? Or, you know, people will come up and disturb me while I'm eating my breakfast or just any... stuff like that. I often wonder, like, what's the motive behind that? And I really like what you just said about social media and sort of breaking down the wall of the mystery of people. I kind of miss that mystery. I kind of miss wondering if this figure in this band actually did all these things that people talk about, and the sort of like not having to know somebody completely and just being a fan of their band and their art. There's a part of me that sort of laments that it's not more like that now.
I also regret like getting older and finding out that everybody that I grew up with, like even if they were like a really obscure band or just one of the lower echelon thrash bands like Razor or someone akin to that, weren't all like living in their dream castles and driving around in, you know, Batmobiles. I always thought, you know, that's exactly what it was going to be like. And I was a bit disappointed to find out. There was a great quote, actually, from a journalist who, or a photographer, he went to Hammersmith Odeon to watch Venom. And he said, yeah, there was Jeff Mantis, you know, a rabid capture of bestial malevolence, where he was gatekeeper of the seven, you know, seals of hell, giving it that large, and you know, there's fireworks and that, you know, like top of the mountain guitar solos. And he said he was staying in Hammersmith overnight because he had to travel up north or something the next day. And he just happened to be going to the train station and seeing Jeff Manta struggling with some shopping bags coming out of the local Sainsbury's. And it just kind of just burst his bubble in one big fell swoop. Yeah, because he was really struggling. So, you know, gatekeeper to shop mum.
What's the weirdest kind of fan situation you found yourself in then, Danny? Talk about.
Yeah.
I can talk about any of it because the sooner this person leaves me alone, the better.
Right. It's ongoing, is it? Fuck.
Oh, God, yeah. And I'm not the first, which makes it very bizarre. Like, other people have had it that I've known, this person, and she's latched onto me. She's Russian. And I've met her, but I didn't know it was her, meet and greet. And she sends like my girlfriend and people I know massive emails about how we're married and how it's just insane. I've kept so much of it. I mean, if it was to be published in a book, people would just, one, get bored because the insanity is just full on from the word go. And there's so much of it. It really is like serial killer behavior. It goes quiet for a little bit. We tried to contacting Russian police, obviously, before the conflict. They're not going to give a shit now. And, yeah, there's not really much people can do at the present. And it just keeps Instagram's fully aware of every, you know, facet of this person. But she just keeps changing, you know, her profile. Keeping the same name, though. And, yeah, she not only contacts people I know, but interacts sometimes with groups that sort of, it's just bizarre. It's quite annoying, actually. Mm.
Yeah, I guess to that point where, you know, for a little while there for me, you know, you just kind of go out in public and you wonder who's around you. And that's a weird feeling to have. You know, that's the one thing I would say that I've never really enjoyed about being in a band that had some sort of success is I love to go out and just be around people and be part of the group. And that moment when you start to like looking behind your shoulder because you know somebody has been writing you and stalking you and you don't know where they are and they could show up at a show. Because, you know, your tour list is on the internet, that your tour bus is right there. Like, it's fairly easy to get access to certain people. That's got to do a number to you after a while in your head. I mean, how long has this been going on with you?
Oh, 5 years, I think.
Oh, wow.
I know.
It's a long
time.
There was
a kid in America who'd been threatening, you know, like, I'm going to come to the venue and shoot you type messages. And a friend of mine, her father was like an FBI agent. So she contacted him and he contacted the local police force. And before the gig, they actually went down to where he worked and scared the living bejesus out of him. They scared the shit out of me as well, because they turned up at a show in Houston, you know, all bravado with the cops with so many, you know, tear gas and, you know, rocket launchers and whatever else they're carrying around. And just, you know, I was in the right and I felt intimidated. But apparently he literally shat himself. But I was quite grateful for that, as it uncovered just a normal kid who worked in Burger King, as opposed to, you know, a criminal mastermind who was planning to kidnap me.
It's fucked up, though, when people, you know, talk about your life. That's where you come on, dude. You can't be doing that shit. It's one thing to you know, flirt with someone or, like, want to be with them, but to threaten their lives or anyone else in their lives, no, that you've crossed the line.
Yeah.
Who's the darkest person you've ever met, Danny, in this world of heavy metal? Not fans, but maybe artists. You must have come across a few genuinely evil people in your time, or as close to evil as a human can get.
Well, that's about perspective, isn't it? I don't think I've met anybody like that, because all the people that they, you know, serialize as being really subversive and dangerous, I've always found to be, actually, I get on very well with them. I don't know what that's about. Or the Norwegian lot. I mean, I've been for dinner at Gull's house and hung around with him for quite a bit from Godseed. He was formerly in Gorgoroth. I mean, he's done plenty of prison time, I believe. And such forth and such like. And they were just really sweet and, like, you wouldn't believe some of their music tastes, you know, or what they like to get up to. It's you know, like cats and stuff, and walks in the park.
So even those more extreme dudes, often it is just an act and they're not actually really.
Well, I met Glenn Benton a few years back and I always heard these horrible stories about him, and, you know, probably press related as well. Also personal ones. People have been to see shows and what have you. And I was like, literally avoided him at this festival. I sort of kind of almost made eye contact and I was like, nah. It's all right. I really wanted to meet him, but I just, you know, it's that thing where if you meet people you grew up listening to and they turn out to be complete cocks, it kind of, I don't want to listen to their album anymore. So I met him and he was really, really funny and a quite genuine guy. So now I can't really think of anybody other than, well, no, it's nothing to do with music scene, really. I suppose Sharon Osbourne was a bit imposing.
She was, yeah.
She used to manage you guys, right, for a bit?
Who, us?
Yeah, did she used to manage Cradle of Filth?
No. I bet she hang about. No Ferrari in the drive. Sorry, no.
Yeah.
Different manager.
Well, we're talking to your current manager later today.
Yes, that's right. Well,
which is going to be very exciting.
He said tomorrow. He's probably got the day wrong, hasn't he?
Has it? Did he say tomorrow? Did he? Brilliant.
I sure he said tomorrow. He said say hello. Say hello to everybody.
Well, we'll find out later on.
That's funny.
So what about Ed Sheeran then, Danny? I know everybody is probably asking you about this all the time at the moment, but first of all, how does the biggest pop star in the world introduce himself to you? I presume he's the one that reaches out, or how do your paths intertwine?
Well, apparently they intertwined years ago, according to him, or didn't intertwine. He actually thanked me, at which point I said, yeah, it's his bank account details, there you go, for keeping him doing what he does. Because originally, long story short, we had a local studio. It was legendary. It was like the home of Extreme Noise Terror and all these crust punk bands and stuff for years and years and years. So you can imagine it wasn't the cleanest of places. But brilliant. It's gone now. It lost an absolute treasure there. But we always used to do our pre-production there and then go to a different studio. And this one occasion, we were going to Andy Sneap's studio.
Nice.
And Sneepy Hollow, we call it. And
good man.
So, yeah, we were doing this pre-production there. And Ed Sheeran, pre-Ed Sheeran fame days, had wanted, because he was a fan, apparently, of Slipknot and a bunch of other bands, probably Killswitch. And Cradle of Filth. He had an Amphetamine album, and he wanted to come to the studio and do work experience, work just because we were there. And the studio guy said, yeah, come down. They're definitely doing an album here, whatever. Of course, we weren't. And Susie found out, he was like, oh, fuck this, I'm not really interested. So he tried to get placement in another studio. But there were none, so they made him go and work, like do some clerical work at the local council, which apparently he said was the worst thing ever. It was fucking awful. And our local council are complete arseholes anyway, and put that on record. And so he literally said, I didn't do the job in music. And I was like, you know, I could have gone into clerical for the rest of my life, but I hated it so fucking much that I was like, I am never doing a job like this in my life. And then he just completely, you know, went over to the dark side and carried on with his musical career. And that came up because he did a video. He was talking about like metal and what have you, because he played a vampire in it or something. And Des just got in touch with his manager, Stuart. And they hit it off. And we just started pen palling, which we have been ever since. So that was probably about 3 years ago. So imagine what his schedule must be like. We didn't get a hold of him until just for shortly before Christmas, when he had some time off. And he came to the studio. Our studio is a little place right in the middle of the English countryside.
Well, hang on a minute, Danny. How far into your pen pal relationship does the idea to work together?
Oh, straight away.
All right. And it's him pitching that, or is it you, or who's kind of...
I think we suggested it, and he said, yeah, cool. Or he said, you know, it'd be great to do something one day, you know, dot, dot, dot. And by the fifth dot, I'd already jumped on it.
Yes. Let's go.
Yeah. And that was like 2.5 years before it actually came to fruition. And instead of like fanfare and, you know, journalists and a load of these people documenting the occasion, and in retrospect, he was actually having the Disney documentary filmed at the time, because if you watch the documentary, which I've had to do since someone's mentioned it, he actually comes back from the day he came to our studio and said, oh, I've just been, you know, hanging out with Cradle of Filth. So the opportunity was there to drag this film crew down, but he just turned up totally without fanfare, like I say, borrowed his wife's car, Cradle of Filth hoodie, guitar over his shoulder, just one of the lads. Did all his stuff, spent the day doing that, then we went for a pub lunch. And then he had to go and pick his daughter up from school. And it was, imagine, we thought, right, okay, let's think of all the really cool places we could go. While he was doing his guitar work, I was like, quick, just check. Okay, this one, can't go wrong here. This is not going to be full of teenagers. And when we got in there, like, beautiful, beamed country pub, very expensive, very eclectic, full of old people. Of course, the moment we walked in there, everybody, all these old people recognized him as well. So it's just the same thing, different age group.
That's amazing, dude. And, we spoke when I saw you at the tattoo convention about that story in shorter form. And the thing that I deducted then, which even more so comes across now, is just what a down-to-earth dude he is, despite his huge stardom. Just seems like, as you say, one of the lads.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he didn't have anybody with him. He just came, rocked up on his own. No security detail. You know, and the thing was, it was all a little vague beforehand, because he was getting back from somewhere, we were getting back from somewhere. So there was no like, okay, be here at a certain time, wherever. He just rang us on the way and said, oh, I'm about 10 minutes away. I think I might be a bit lost. He went and parked. And it's a hamlet, and he still managed to park somewhere completely different. And there wasn't like, if I was in his position, I'd be thinking on the way there, oh my God, I hope they haven't brought like their wives, girlfriends, or, you know, like, oh, my mum's a massive fan, so I thought she'd come along. And there was none of that. So he just took a punt, didn't he, really, and trusted that we weren't there and it was all pseudonyms and we were sending to Bulgaria for a ransom. Which it crossed our minds.
I like that. I like hearing that type of stuff, because to me, celebrityism is garbage. I can't stand it. I like when people don't need to be that way, you know, have their entourage with them, or, you know, constantly doing videoing or content, because, you know, I love when it's just people getting together doing a thing. That's great. That's cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. And it's, anyway, back to the, without boring everybody with more stories, it's all done. We're just in the sort of, back into, out of the fantasy, good, let's enjoy ourselves stage, into the, well, now we've got to get it sorted. The powers that be have got to get it sorted to be released. And it's all it's for charity, so you can imagine the complications inherent there as well.
And is it Cradle of Filth song with a Ed Sheeran feature? Is it Danny and Ed? Like, what's the billing of
it? Yeah, well, it's Cradle of Filth featuring Ed Sheeran.
Amazing.
And it's exactly what it does on the tin. It's got Cradle of Filth in it and Ed Sheeran.
Amazing. I mean, you've always had the most interesting and varied collaborators throughout your career, whether it's Pinhead from Hellraiser, or, you know, what was the lady who was in all the horror films, the Polish actress that you did a bunch of stuff
Ingrid
with as well?
Pitt.
Ingrid Pitt. Yeah. I mean, so many amazing collaborations and intimate moments you've shared with all kinds of people. It'd be hard to think of someone going from Pinhead.
Yeah, we don't talk about that, hey?
to Ed Sheeran. Do you know what I mean? That's quite a broad church.
Yeah. But I think that's the beauty of it, because people always like say, what the hell? Why did you do? I did something with this band called Twisted. And that was the worst. I mean, more so than Ed Sheeran, because, you know, they're from that much despised, insane clown posse sort of group of people. And it's got their own movement, you know, and there's got lots of different rappers that are all sort of serial killer based that are attributed to them. And I just really liked it. And they were really genuine people. And I just think, what's the point of doing something like, I'm not, if the band ever gets to hear of it. I mean, with Mayhem, or, you know, someone that's not too distant from what you're doing, it doesn't really mean much, does it? I like the juxtaposition, the marriage of opposites. I mean, doing something with Ed Sheeran is like, it's PK's people interest. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And the thing about the song actually is, it does sound like an Ed Sheeran song for a bit of it, like literally like an Ed Sheeran song. But then we did manage to get him to sing over a blast beat as well.
Yes, that's fucking awesome.
You know, that's like a sort of dream come true, really, to do things like that.
Well, and all these years in, mate, you know, wait till Ed Sheeran's fans get their ears around this.
No, he really, we found one of his songs that he really goes for it, that almost hits rock, you know. And we said, right, like that, but a bit more extreme, you know, like really go for it. Go Bonnie Tyler on us.
I think you're going to piss off so many of his fans, and it's going to be great.
or they're going to come over to the dark side and start discovering Cradle fucking Filth.
Did you have that with the Bring Me the Horizon collaboration, Danny? Would you have as much as you might expect of this kind of new generation of fan base discovering your music and jumping on board? because they're obviously huge as well in their own little world.
Oh my god! Yeah, I did. They flew me from Brazil. I mean, I was on the way back, but I was on the way to Czech Republic, and they diverted me to go and they did a big thing at this Victoria Park, and it was like that. It was them, and they had a whole day of Run the Jewels, I think, and bands like that supported. It was huge, 70,000 people, and they blew like 100 grand on this massive stage show. And I was there just for that song, and yeah, almost went tits up as well, because they were on a click track, and he just told me as we were about to go on stage, oh, damn, I forgot to say, we'd do a different version of it, so just watch me. And I was like, and he was down the front on this bloody walkway, and I'm sort of about 200 meters behind him going, and luckily just went in, I just went for it, and it was the right spot. I was literally jumping into an ocean. It was bizarre, but yeah, they're huge. And I only did that originally is because my daughter was a massive fan of Ollie Sykes. And so when we did the video, I took her up to meet him, and she's actually in the video doing a bit of shopping, I think. And so I made her sort of dream come true. And I was really surprised afterwards just how much coverage it got, just for like a, I don't know, because you can barely hear me on the bloody record anyway. But yeah, celebrate.
I think there's something magic there that a lot of artists who become parents kind of find when they, you know, will link up with artists that perhaps they're only really collaborating with because their kids are fans. And then it leads on to this whole other, you know, lease of life within your own artistic lane. One of the joys of parenthood, one of the many joys, I'm sure, Danny.
Yeah. He says, like,
Is there any music that you will have to kind of, you know, raise your eyebrows to that when that comes on the car? You know, have you become the parent that is offended or shocked by anything that your kids are listening to?
Well, no, my daughter's 24. So, yeah.
She's allowed to do what she wants at this stage.
Shocked about that sort of thing anyway, wouldn't it? Even if it wasn't me.
Was there ever that moment where you were like, ooh, and you found yourself becoming the parent that was shocked?
Fuck yes, absolutely. We had a day out one day, and we were listening to Radio 1 in the car. So my ex-wife was driving, and the in-betweeners were being interviewed. And it was like, I don't know, Jesse probably wouldn't know if you watched the in-betweeners. It's a British sitcom about school kids, and it's pretty adult. But I didn't know that at the time, because obviously interview Radio 1, it was very sanitized. And so the kids on it sounded like it was like Grain Chill, which was a very sanitized, you know, kids program. And so I sat down to watch it with her, like, you know, not feigning interest. I was genuinely interested. And I thought, oh, cool, another good connection. I like this. And I just sat down on the sofa, and the first thing that came out of this kid's mouth was, oh, your mum's fucking horny, isn't she? Oh, I'd love to spaff on her tits. And I was like, next to my 8-year-old daughter. I couldn't fucking believe it. Like, literally the most embarrassed I've ever been. I just like went blood red, everything, like all the oxygen sucked out the room. And I just don't like believe. My ex-wife was in hysterics. She said, I told you, it's really brutal. So I didn't think it was that fucking brutal.
pump the brakes for a second, because that is an amazing moment if you think about your career. And we were talking earlier about the t-shirt. Like, you had a moment that some parents might have had from your fucking t-shirt, dude.
It's like a punishment from God.
Oh, that's fucking amazing. Yeah, that's a lot for an 8-year-old.
But that's the thing, kids, you know, 8, 9, you know, they're talking about that sort of stuff anyway, I guess. Yeah. Well, it must be. And we were out, you know. We didn't have the internet when we were young, so we were climbing trees and, you know, on our BMXs, et cetera, et cetera, looking for E.T.
Yeah, that's the beauty of that. I hate to be that guy, but man, we had a good, I love those days. I still, shit, there's moments where I go out in the woods and I play fucking army with myself. Like, I just go on, like, hide in the woods. Like, I love that shit. Hey,
did you say with yourself? Or with yourself?
With myself. Yes.
With himself. Yeah.
I do it with myself. Yes, you are. You heard me right. I'm a loner, man. I don't have a lot of friends.
Shot them all.
Oh, that's great.
Hey, Danny, I want to ask you something. Do you think you are somebody who is difficult to work with, or do you just demand a lot and it's hard for you to find people that match your passion and drive? Because, you know, you've obviously had so many different members in Cradle of Filth over the years. But whenever I've met you, you seem just like the most amiable, easygoing dude. So is it the case that just, you know, with a band of that nature, it's hard to find collaborators that are as invested as you? Or are you indeed just the most difficult man alive when it comes to making music?
No, I don't think so. Well, obviously I wouldn't, would I? We've only actually fired, well, I've only ever fired, when I say me, it's always been a collaborative thing between me and, you know, one of like two, we only had two, we had an interim manager, but he's not even worth talking about. Two managers, with the current one being Des. We've only ever had to fire two people, I think, out of 35 extras that have left. Wow. And the emphasis on left, because a lot of people can't keep up with the lifestyle sometimes. Some people just get tired and they like, or they've found someone on the road, you know, they found someone on the road through the band, then they decide they're going to start a life with them, and then the band becomes secondary, and then then the next thing is, you know, I don't really want to do this anymore, or whatever. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, they've got another band going. And I don't know, there's a myriad of reasons. But I don't think that's one of them, because of management, but everybody has their own kind of, they don't get expected to do a huge amount. And they're treated really well. We try and be as good friends as possible. I mean, we don't spend much time with each other out of the band scenario, but that's probably because we've got two people in the Czech Republic, two in America, one in Scotland, and I live at the bottom of England. So, you know, there's not a lot of... When I had a local band, yeah, we hung out all the time. But on tour, we hang out. We try and do fun things, you know, sightseeing and what have you. But yeah, I put that down to, yeah, just generally people think they can either do it better, or it's too much for them. They don't like being on the road for loads, as in the case of Lindsay, our previous keyboardist. She just got to a point where it's like, it's not good for my health anymore. I want to be at home with my boyfriend and my cat and, you know, do a day job or part-time job and then do music as a sort of, you know, not full-on ruining her health type thing.
It's a slippery slope. I don't think a lot of people realize how difficult it is to keep a band together and all the ins and outs. And, you know, like you said, touring, which either you love it or you hate it, or, you know, a balance of the two for me is a nice sweet spot. But you've got to be a certain type of person, and egos get in the way. There's so many things that really go into keeping a band together that is difficult. And that's what people don't see. You know, you talk about social media. Bands only put out the cool stuff. You don't see all the weird in-between stuff, the travel, the delayed flights, all that bullshit, you know, that's difficult. It's fucking hard.
Going to the flights thing, I think the best quote I ever heard was, I think it was Johnny Winters. It doesn't matter who said it. They literally said, I'll do all the gigs in the world for free. Literally, I'll play to anybody. You cunts are paying for me to sit in hotel waiting rooms and airports and stuff like that. That's what you're paying me for. The rest I'll do for nothing.
Oh, yeah. And
that's really apt, because that's another thing that people get. If you go and tour South America, for example, you know, you're going to be spending 65% of your time in South America in airports or traveling to and from airports or on planes. And it sounds luxurious and wow, I'm jet setting, but you know, 35 minutes into the first one, you're going, yeah, I can see this is a problem.
Exhausting, really. That's the bottom line with it. It's fucking exhausting. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Where's Cradle's biggest territories, Danny? Where do you play the biggest?
Oh, I don't stages? Know. All over, I guess, but really, I think America and South America. I don't know why, but yeah. Those two continents, incontinents. Absolutely. We do pretty well all over the place. But I'd say, yeah, America, for some reason, has taken a shine to us.
How much do you think aside from the band being awesome, which they are, how much do you think, especially with American audiences, that could be attributed to, you know, say a Bam Margera type? Because he seemed to have really, I think, helped introduce a lot of a certain generation of people to bands like Cradle of Filth and who else, like him, obviously, Turbo Negro.
Yeah,
because he had all these bands on his show when that show was the biggest thing in the world. Do you think a bit of it is that?
It could be, but that for that to be correct, you'd have to assume that, because America's quite fickle. Well, everywhere is fickle. If you're not in, if you, as soon as you get out of the public eye, then people tend to forget about you. So that would be on the assumption that we're constantly in the public eye in America. And I wish that was so. Because I'll be able to pay my mortgage off a lot quicker. Yeah, that's the person that's fallen somewhat from grace, is dear old Bam. Like I say, at one point he was literally the patron saint of Finland. Did you say Turbo Negro? There was him, 69 Eyes, Erasmus, you know?
Yeah.
Morpheus. I mean, that definitely helped. I mean, I couldn't believe how I went to stay with him for a week, which was probably one of the craziest fucked up weeks of my life. Honestly, insane.
Have you ever seen a fame hurricane bigger than what was around him at that time?
I couldn't believe it. He, again, very down to earth person, came to pick me up from the airport in his car, which happened to be a Lamborghini. Which had the roof cut out. Billy Idol the week before chainsawed the roof out, so we couldn't leave it anywhere, which was weird. So we were like parking it on the curb outside bars and things like that. just a weird week. One day we were doing this. The next day we were like going down to in a limo to New York to open a bloody skateboard shop. It was just proper mental. I couldn't believe the size of his celebrityness. Celebrityness? Yes.
Sure.
His fame. So, yeah, I guess that would have helped. I mean, MTV is king, isn't it? Or was?
Was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine, dude. I've heard stories, too, about the craziness that went on in his life and his lifestyle and his little ranch he had there.
And what's still going on, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, man. Fame can fuck people up, man. Money can fuck people up. I mean, I'll take the money, but I can do without the fame, man. Shit.
Yeah, I think I'm about the same. Unfortunately, one sort of kind of goes with the other.
Yeah.
Unless you win the lottery and then just buy a private island and disappear. But yeah, I like the fact that it's good at the moment because, like, although I do get noticed from time to time, it's not full on. And where I live, everybody's super, well, either very kind and respectful or just fucking dumb and ignorant. But I get left alone and people know where I live. I've only had one person camp out in my garden and then they ended up in a mental asylum. So he wasn't just a regular Joe. I agree. I'd rather be sort of notorious and have my own pad and things to enjoy rather than being hounded all the time. It'd be terrible.
So I got a question for you, just personal curiosity, because I'm kind of in that stage of my life now, you know, mid 40s going into 50s, looking back on my life, what is it for you that keeps you interested, engaged, and keep going, other than the fact that this is just what you do and, you know, you maintain it? But what is it that keeps you back on the road, making music, caring about what you do, putting your energy and your spirit into it?
Who says I do?
Maybe that's you don't.
I just really enjoy it. I think the pandemic as well, I think for everybody, would press the reset button, whether it was like, you know what, I'm done with music, I suddenly realized it's shit, I want to be, you know, I got a job delivering Amazon Prime or whatever, and I want to be a family man, which I know a lot of people did. I know a lot of people that got jobs and then like, oh my god, thank god for the music industry. But I think it's just may just realize, you know what, we're really lucky at what we do. You know, we're kind of free spirits. We don't have to, you know, we're king in our own areas. We don't have to be living in a palace with, you know, multitude of riches. Being free spirited means you've got your, you know, you find your treasures and other things by doing everything at your own pace, at your own time, and the things you love. as well. There's so many people I know are stuck in jobs they fucking hate, can't wait to get out of them. And at times, yeah, it can be a bit bleak, but I think that's more imposed by other people, you know, the status quo and whatever. The world isn't short of things. You know, I couldn't be bored being at home. I've got too many things to do or to look at or read or watch or, you know, listen. Plenty of clothes to put in the washing machine. So, yeah, I just think if you're really into stuff, then you don't really grow out of it. I mean, like I say, I'm turning 50 in pretty much exactly a month. And, yeah, I still feel like a boy. I still have that nostalgia. I still get up in the morning and smell the air and go, oh, my God, it's summer. Quick, where's How Will I Laugh Tomorrow? Let's put that on while I have my breakfast, you know, and do a bit of headbanging. Perhaps break the skateboard out.
Love that. Yeah, I love what you just said, though, about, you know, it's not necessarily about the lifestyle of touring. It's about having the free time. Like, to me, one of my favorite things when I'm not touring is being free on a Wednesday afternoon to go sit in a tube and float down a river near my house here in the mountains. Like, I can do stuff like that. And you got people who are stuck in an office, stuck in a job midday in the summer, and they can't go out and enjoy themselves because they have to do this job that's this. And what a luxury to have the free time to just do that thing. Oh, Wednesday I'm gonna go swim in a lake for 4 hours because I can, you know?
Which sounds absolutely marvelous. And anybody would be fool not to go, oh my God, I'd love to do that, you know?
Yeah.
When I was young, I was looking at my uncle's all very lot older than my mum and my dad. And they were like sort of, 40-ish at the time. And I looked up at them and thought, God, they're so old. And now, yeah, like, I'm 50. I think that the demographics changed, though. Back in the day, everybody had jobs. Everybody had to do it. There were few artists, were few and far between. It was all post-war. We're building the country back up again, you know, that sort of thing. So I think the demographics changed. I hope this is the case, that people will get younger as they get older. Do you know what I mean? Like I said, I certainly feel young. I've got a group of people that are very artistic around me, tattoo people, artists, that sort of thing. And they all seem very young at heart. And I think that keeps you young at heart as well.
Amen. Yeah, I feel better now in my 40s than I did in my 20s, for sure.
Yeah. But I think you know where you're going. You know, when you're young, it's all chaos and, you know, unfamiliarity. Got it. And being a bit uncertain of your surroundings. You've got it all, but you don't really know what to do with it. You've got a nice shiny tool, but no idea of how to handle it. And then when you're older, you look back and say, yeah, you know, I could have done this better or whatever, but all these paths have led me to where I am now. So if it had all been, you know, plaques and roses, then maybe I wouldn't have been the person I am now. And I think it shapes you that way. And it's weird because it's some sort of trodden territory, the age thing. I mean, you've got the progenitors, the starters of metal, the Aussies, you know, the Black Sabbaths, even the Motley Crues, the Priests, they're all getting to that age now and they're still performing. So you don't know how long the shelf life is, you know?
I think it's as long as you're having fun, right?
Yeah, but could you imagine me doing what I'm doing at 80? It'd be fucking awful.
You just need loads of young, athletic, acrobatic dancers around you, you know, because that's what Motley Crue have, you know, when they go out. It's just they've got beautiful women breathing fire and it's still an exciting show.
Yeah, backing back's working. Brilliant. Boxes ticked.
Dude, well, this has been great, man. It's been really cool to catch up and to let you two kind of, you know, share some perspectives of the road. And yeah, Danny, you're a wicked dude. I've always enjoyed your company and your time, and I'm grateful for it today.
Oh, thank you very much. Very kind of you. It was nice catching up at that tattoo place. I had a really good weekend. It was really chilled.
Yeah, everybody there was lovely, and your partner seems like a wonderful, wonderful woman. And
yeah,
I think that, you know, when you, as you said earlier on, when you're surrounded by people, because I'm presuming through her you've met a lot of different artists as well, and outside of your traditional field of music. And I think when you, and I think Jesse has it as well, because his partner's a performer and she's friends with a lot of dancers, and I think once you're around your people, you know, it's like you're as young as you feel, because you're engaged just in the act of being alive. and you're surrounded by good company and creative folks. That's all you need, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Keeps the blood pumping. And the fact she's 20 years younger. Thrilled that might have something to do with it at all. But
yeah.
I totally agree. Yeah. You surround yourself with good people and yeah, keeps you interested.
Yeah, I'd be remiss not to mention that my fiance Purple loves you and says hello.
Hi, Purple.
And she's younger than me too. She keeps me young. I love that girl. And also Brittany Elliott and Johnny.
Hey, yeah, I love
Johnny. Yep. Say hello as well.
Awesome, and Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny. Yep. Been talking to them. They're going to be doing the Lamb of God cruise. I'm going to be on there with Purple. Purple's performing pole dancing and aerial, well, DJ some metal stuff, and they're doing tattooing on the boat. So be a fun little party.
Awesome. Sounds like a fun. Yeah, say hello to them for me.
Good. I will. Really, dude, it was a pleasure, man. It was nice chatting with you and just being able to shoot the shit and just hang with you. And next time we do cross paths, if it's not brief, maybe we'll have a little chat then as well. It's been a total fucking pleasure.
A non-alcoholic beer.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have some mocktails.
I better check in with him and remind him. Is it literally today he's seeing you or what?
Yeah, it's meant to be in like 4 hours. So yeah, give him a little reminder.
Yeah.
I'll get straight onto it.
That's funny.
You're managing him now. The roles are reversed.
Absolutely.
I love it.
God, yeah. Literally have to wipe his...
Nice one, Danny. Always a pleasure, mate. Look forward to our next in-person meeting. And thanks again for today, mate. It was really good fun.
Thank you, Jesse, as well. Take it easy.
Cheers, buddy. Pleasure, man.
Cheerio.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.